There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, guys. I just thought I'd come over and see what was going on before the kids got out of summer school.
Hey, Mike, you want to ride along with me today? It's pretty warm outside, and the ice cream's going to be flying fast and furious. Remember how good you were at crowd control last time? Hey, what's going on here?
The funeral is about to begin.
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 467. I'm Scott Johnson, joined today by Brian. Just put your hand in the black box, Dunaway.
Oh, how appropriate. Oh, hi. Hi. And welcome to the Red Palm Fortune Telling at Home, where we will read your palm and tell you about upcoming life events. Now,
perfect.
If you would kindly... Perfect. Now, if you would kindly just stick your hand in the box while I light about 1,000 more candles in here so Grandma will stop complaining about being cold and dead. What box, you say? Why, the one that just materialized on the table before your very eyes, of course. Now, go ahead. Stick your hand in there. No? All right. How about a foot? Just stick your foot in the box. A pinky toe. We just need a pinky toe for demonstration purposes. Come on. There has to be a body part that you are willing to stick into a mysterious, suddenly appearing box. Oh, that was unexpected. I don't think Grandma's ever seen anyone stick that in there. Are you sure? All right. Left nipple in the box it is. Oh, what's in the box? You mean besides your nipple? Well, hopefully it's not my grandma's old but freakishly strong toes and another hole in the bottom of the box. What's that? It really hurts. Well, no crap. You stuck your nipple in a box. Should you fear it? Yes. Yes, you should. Grandma has a lot of free time on her hands and feet. But don't worry, it's just a reflection of your own impending old age, death, and also gross feet. Oh, no, wait, never mind. You should totally worry. Death is scary. Now take back your nipple and remember what you have learned here today. What? No tip? Just the nip? All right. Goodbye. Tell your friends.
That lady looked like Ozzy Osbourne. It freaked me out.
She looked like something.
Like modern Ozzy. It was weird. All right.
Just leave your tip on the box, Ozzy.
The box, Ozzy.
All right. With us also, Randy, nothing hotter than making out on the hard ground of an old cemetery, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Hey.
Randy.
Good morning, and thank you all for coming to the Hibiscus Room at the Goodyear, Arizona Embassy Suites so early on a Tuesday morning. Thank you for your donation of yellow blood in the blood drive out in the parking lot, and thank you for leaving your Jawas with the concierge, and thank you for purchasing my new book, Silver Flying Murder Balls, How to Kill People Who Weirdly Keep Coming Over to Your Property, even though there's been a string of killings there. Inside, you're going to learn my three primary rules for slashers. Number one, remember precisely what we learned from our ancient text, Dune by Frank Herbert. And I do mean precise. You're going to want to quote Dune verbatim. Mm-hmm. Here's another one. There is no escape. We pay for the violence of our ancestors. Number two. After showing them some nice naked breasts, always kill people in the cemetery, or even better, in the mausoleum, and then you won't have to move the body very far. Mm. Number three. If you do have to move a body, you can always put it inside the cold case of an ice cream truck. Yes, sir. You with the question in the audience? Yeah. Okay, so for those of you who couldn't hear him, he asked, why aren't you guys here? You're going to get blood on my ice cream, are you? Shut up, Clint Howard. This is good advice.
He does like a poor man's
Clint Howard. Oh, borderline. He totally
I did. Reggie.
Like as if there's a rich man's Clint Howard.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I don't know. Clint Howard, if, that's true. He just works for free for his brother, and that's about it. With us finally, Brian, he's going to get that tall bastard Ibbot.
Darn right. In case you're just joining us, we're here with Mike, the 13-year-old survivor of the mayhem at Morningside Cemetery. Mike, after dealing with severed but still active fingers, flying knife balls, hooded midget zombies, portals to other dimensions, and bugs impervious to the disposal, tell us the most haunting memory you have from this ordeal. Seeing the Undertaker pick up a coffin all by himself? You just keep going on about that. All right. That's your big takeaway. All right, we'll be right back with more of this riveting interview with Mike after these messages. Hi. Do you like having sex in cemeteries, hanging out in bars, and having sex in cemeteries? Meet other single women like me who are definitely not tall, angry Undertaker men by calling 1-976 Tombstone Bone. I'll show you one of my Tombstone boobs. Call bone. Today, sir. We love our Lord. Denim jacket. But how do we remove those tough stains? Blood, mango puree, and fresh grave dirt can mess up the look of your sweet denim jacket. Get biz and quit fighting your denim jacket. No, really, quit fighting your denim jacket. You're going to break those rails by the stair. Or, see, you broke those rails by the stairs. Quit fighting your denim jacket.
You know, you
missed what I said. I thought you said demon jacket at first, and I was going to. How clever. Oh, well.
I just want to say the fighting the jacket was the best acting in the movie by a lot.
Oh, no. No, no.
It was. Well,
there was
it
a lot of fighting with stuff. Acting.
Well,
it was going all over the place. Like, to be able to fly. The creature must be able to flap its wings and lift from air, right?
Right. It was a hairy no rhinoceros in that... beetle.
Right. Yes, exactly. But there's no air in that denim jacket that the fly can... So it would not be able to go zoom left and zoom right and zoom left. It might fight within the jacket.
Supernatural. It's supernatural. Yeah, it's supernatural. I'm not buying that.
Ah.
Don't forget, the whole thing was a dream. So, you know, dream logic applies.
Yeah, dream logic totally applies.
Tall man was in the mirror. It wasn't a dream.
Yeah.
That whole thing, dude. Oh, my gosh. All right. Can we got to get to a thing we said last week that I was sure that Dunaway was wrong about. Now I have to completely, like, supplicate myself and say he was right. It's not even the right word, but I'll use it anyway. Hey. You said that you thought that Phantasm 1, or Phantasm, as it's called,
right.
only had limited use of the blade ball,
right.
and that it was the future incarnations of the movies that really leaned into the blade ball thing. And I thought, no, there's blade ball all over this thing. It's like constant, like never not having a blade ball on screen. And you were totally right. It was really just the one guy with the brain hemorrhage.
Yeah, it's just a very briefly viewed the, but that happens in a lot of first time horror franchises that go on, right?
Yeah, so. I guess what I'm saying is you were not only totally right about it, but it's so funny how a thing like that becomes the icon, because all it of does, the other posters for preceding, or you know, for successive films, they all feature prominently, big fat in the middle of the posters, a blade ball doing blade ball shit.
Yeah, people probably like really reacted well seeing it and said, oh my god, the blade ball is the best thing about this. And they said, oh, we should lean into the blade ball for future.
That's kind of like a lot of things. That's a trope, right?
It is.
You throw a lot of things out and see what people like, and then in the sequels you really hammer that home.
Right.
There's like Pinhead and Hellraiser, right? Mm-hmm. They didn't know that he was going to end up being the most iconic thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Sure. We totally didn't realize that somebody with a bunch of pins in their head would appeal to people. It was like supposed to be a throwaway thing, right?
Well, you know, another good example is
we were surprised in the first Hellraiser that there were lots of enemies. Like, we thought, oh, this is the Pinhead movie. No, there was a bunch of people, and he just was the most memorable of them, is what I'm saying.
Another good example of this is Schwarzenegger's I'll be back line, right? Because in the first Terminator, that was just going to be a thing. I'll be back. And boom, he drives through the thing. Mm-hmm. People love that so much. And it's like, oh, we got to put, he's got to say this in every movie from now on until forever. And
yeah,
it kind of takes a life on his of its own.
Right.
So the thing is, I had never heard of Phantasm, much less seen it or anything from it.
Oh, weird.
And I'm God kind bless of you. I'm kind of amazed by this movie because it feels like it's very endemic to this genre. Right. Whereas, like, a lot of times when you see genre films like this, you're looking back in time at something that just drew on things before it. Now, admittedly, Phantasm, for some reason, really draws on Dune and Star Wars or something. But, like, a lot of you're telling me I don't sound good.
No, they see, the idea of that was to say it behind the scenes so that you didn't say it out loud. So that you would just see it.
It's the producer saying in your ear.
Hold on, everybody. I'm getting a message now. Hold on. Wait a minute. I'm getting a message. It appears that my fly is down. My fly is down. My fly is down.
I may as well just say it. It sounds like your mic slipped into beard
mode.
Does
it sound any different now?
A little bit, yeah.
Did you take it out of your butt?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think it was just angled. It was angled funny. You're fine now.
I had it wrapped up in a towel and I was trying to shove it in the garbage.
That explains
I appreciate the reminder that I shouldn't do that.
No problem.
Anyway, I just really like genre films, and I'm kind of surprised. Like, how have I never heard of this? Mm-hmm. And it like turns out, like, not only have I never heard of this or seen it, but it's like a pillar of the genre.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny to think of this piece of garbage as something that was really important at the time.
You see, this is kind of Randy, you're just like just a minute earlier than most of the rest of us on the show. He's the baby of the show, and so this would have fell, the first one and the second one would have probably fell in a time when you were just a little bit too young to have seen it. And then by the time you get to 3 and 4 and 5, they're almost straight to video. I mean, they're not well advertised.
Also, like like a lot of people, I fell in love with movies as a teenager, and there's a moment when you go, oh, I want to see every movie that ever existed. But actually, what you want to see and what you seek out are good movies. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's just how that goes. And so, like, I remember, like, there were years where I watched 500 movies a year, and it was like I was trying to avoid stuff like this. Like, I didn't want to waste my time.
Well, while I was over in the corner of Blockbuster going, more, right. I need more.
This is what this stack of movies is on their way to the trash can. No,
let me rent them. Way. You fools.
Yeah. Bunch of fools. Every one of you. Did we mention this was a Don Coscarelli movie? We just watched
two
one of his.
In a row.
Yeah. 2 weeks in a row, baby. He. This is very different, though, from like Beastmaster, as badly acted as it is. It tonally and everything is just so different from this. This is like a whole different.
Yeah.
Bag of worms, I don't know how I kind of feel about it. I kind of thought I was going to get something less like this was the most budgety thing I've ever seen. Like, the most expense here must have been the blade ball and the blood effects coming out of it, because everything else you could do with just like you said, let's move my jacket around real fast, and also these little tiny hooded guys are just probably a little kid in there wrestling me. And like,
I mean, there was one point where Jody is sitting in a chair waiting for Mike to come back from somewhere, and you hear a door slam, and then it's like a cut to a scene of Mike standing in front of the door, which is like, what, could we not even afford to like pan the camera and show Mike coming in the door? It's just like,
it's gonna cost you
some
extra,
sort of weird decision editing and acting.
This movie has actually, we're fortunate enough to see where a director pretty much starts. He did some other things before this, but not much. And so they filmed this over a year-long period, only on the weekends. They had to maintain a cast and continuity through a year's worth of filming only on weekends. Geez. Oh, my God. With very little shot list, a lot of stuff being shot in order, and then at the end when you're trying to edit this thing together, realizing that you have, like, you're missing everything and rewrites during the script. It's a miracle this movie even is slightly cohesive.
They had locations in Oregon, Northern California, and Southern California, and they made it. I mean, they somehow edited it all together so that it didn't look too bad.
Right.
But the fact that they were so spread out lets you know they were just borrowing. Like, they were just like, I know a guy who knows a guy who has a property we can shoot on, you know? And that's going to mm-hmm. really limit you. You try to make sure that people can't see the highway behind your shot. So you get real narrow. And there's so many narrow shots in this film that it almost made me like a little sick, you know, like, why are we so close to this? I don't need to be so close to this. And then suddenly we cut and we're close to something else. Like, back up. Stop it.
But it lends to the uncomfortableness of this, because the subject of the film is a teenager, truly almost a preteen, who is dealing with death, and who's had several deaths recently that impact him greatly. And so it's an interesting exploration. Yeah, so
we're gonna say 13 and driving 13. A car.
Although the actor was something like 16, which blows my mind. Like, I had to look it up and see when the actor was born and when they made the movie. He does not look 16. Like, if I saw this kid behind the wheel, I would say, watch out for Johnny Law, because you're...
I had forgotten that the first one was a dream. I usually watch 2 and 3 when I'm watching Phantasm. I have to watch them in a row.
Well, this is one of those where 2 is considered the good one, right? Another one.
Yeah, 2 is when it actually, to me, finally is put together, and it is, you know, it's what I think of when I think of Phantasm. But the first one, it just had this thing about the dream that I had totally forgotten about. And so when I was writing my notes, everything was like, how in the crap did he follow a Himikuda to the bar on foot? How is he constantly, how's this kid constantly showing up? Does he have like superpowers? And so a lot of my notes were like, because I thought I was really, you know, discovering something odd about the film. But in the end, when I find out it's a dream, I'm like, oh, okay. Oh,
well, I tried to go to TV Tropes and load the It Was All a Dream page, and I crashed their server. Like, it's important, though, to remember, once again, this movie's 40 years old. Like, they, you know, this trope wasn't as overblown and trite.
We hadn't even seen Dallas yet, have we? We hadn't even seen JR get shot.
But it's such a cop-out. It's so, you know, it basically says, hey, you know the thing you just spent the last 89 minutes watching? Nothing really happened.
Yeah.
But then if there's a sequel.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, oh, right, exactly. Because the bottom line is, it isn't a dream. I mean, it is,
right, exactly.
But it isn't, because clearly it isn't. If it was, then you wouldn't have a sequel.
The tall man appearing at the end of the film after he's woken up and yanking him back through the mirror.
Right, and it's not part of the mythos like it is with, say, Elm Street or something, where the whole point is to get you in your dreams. This is just like, all this stuff seems real until it's not. Ah, I got you at the end. It wasn't real. I hate that. Hate it.
So this is how it is. His suspicion about the Undertaker, the tall man, is, and this is my opinion, of course, is that his suspicion is that the Undertaker is something otherworldly, and parents aren't believing him, and he has taken this into his dream world, and he has expanded upon it in his dream world. But then in reality, he's kind of right. So the things that happen in the movie only really happen in the dream world, but he's not wrong at the end of the day.
Mm.
And so it exists.
Do we know when this dream starts? Because in the real, quote unquote, real world,
from the get go,
Jody's been dead for the whole time. So anything from the where?
Well, wait. Right, how can it be from the get go? Because the get go is Lady doing it very weirdly. By the way,
yeah,
the
he's a teenager. He's having a partial wet dream in his dream. Okay, so he's like, everything is about dealing with his brother's death. His brother was obviously out with some lady at the bar, and this is something that he frequently did. Once again,
so that's not the dream. Yeah. The lady that stabbed
all the dream. No, it's a dream about things that are distorted,
okay,
but are true.
Okay, because we part never, of his dream is that people have, that's not how people have sex. I'm sorry. There's a weird.
Well, that's what a, right? That's what a 12, 13 year old may think. That was the point. It was like, okay. That's just the reason why everything was askew.
Okay.
Because the whole thing was a dream.
Okay. All right.
I think the whole thing was askew because of budget. And I think that the way people had sex, because that's the way the director thinks people have sex. Not because I think this is water. What's the symbolism of water?
Right. No, well, I'll tell you this. The oddness of the sex is partially due to the way it had to be shot, because Lavender Lady had to have a double Lavender. Wasn't her name Lavender? Was it?
Yeah, Lavender Lady.
Yeah, double Lavender. So she would not act in scene with the guy, Tommy, the actor, whoever his name was, because she didn't want to. She did not want to do a naked scene, and she did not want to be that close to the other guy. Therefore, they had to do all this trickery of shooting real up close, like Randy said, and doing having and body seeing, doubles,
like having the headstone block the faces.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah, you could use doubles and stuff. But back to the whole, it was all a dream, though. Right. What's the most irritating about this is that you don't get the bookend. You get the ending of like him waking up and it was all a dream, but Tommy's death, is what brings Reggie and Jody together at the funeral. Oh yeah, you know, the trio's broken up, man. So that couldn't have taken place. So did Tom even really die? Well, like,
can any of that really happen? Just because it happened in a dream doesn't mean it never happened necessarily, but we have to take
to depict that you have to use a lot of subtlety, and this film just doesn't have it at all.
That was not a dream.
Subtlety is not a bullet in the chamber.
Nope.
It's a teenager's dream of a horrific thing that he's trying to process.
You really want us to be 100% sure
to buy into it and like say, you know what? Okay, I can appreciate it. That's not going to happen.
Once again, that's the reason why every time I say it, I try to stop and go, in my opinion.
Well, okay. No. This is a good point. Actually, now you're starting to sway me, because there was a scene when he was talking to Ozzy Osbourne and the girl at the table there. And when I had to rewind it because I wasn't sure I saw it right, but that box, as referenced earlier in your intro, was there, and then he put the money on it, and then it went away.
Yeah.
It disappeared, and the kid didn't react. He just went.
There was a lot of stuff that he really didn't react to. There was one moment near the end where he finally reacts to something, but chopping off dude's fingers and mango puree coming out, didn't really react to it. Right. The thing coming out of the little hairy rhinoceros beetle coming out of the box, didn't really react to it, or climbing on his head. It wasn't until there was something in the mausoleum near the end that he's like, oh, finally reacting to it. Okay.
Yeah.
Looking through a portal into another dimension. Huh? So, you know, I can do my hand. Look, my hand disappears. My hand comes out. Yeah. My hand disappears. My hand comes out.
Yeah. So maybe I'm just, I guess you're scooching me forward to the whole dream thing. Cause he would have that box thing disappearing. Like you're either telling me that the world has this magic in it and everyone's used to it, or it's a dream because he did it and it didn't even flinch him, because dreams are like that.
This is a movie that you have to watch a second time knowing that it's a dream for most of it to make sense. Otherwise it seems very incoherent, which is fun because it kind of leans into the fact that even if they had wanted to, they probably couldn't have filmed something that could have been very coherent because of the shooting schedule.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a hell of a thing. This is one of those movies that I would walk through a Blockbuster or any other, you know, home video place in the 80s as a teenager, and I would say, you know, let's go over by the horror section. And in the horror section, there was always these things that stared at me. One was House with the floating hand pushing the doorbell.
Right.
One was like the weird monkey on the cover of that. What was that one we watched?
Monkey Shine.
Oh, yeah.
And the other one was this. It was this phantasm guy's face. And it may have been like four movies in. I don't know. But but it was this old weird looking, you know, guy with white hair in the back, mullet hair, going rrr. And it always looked at me, and I never picked it up. And we never saw it. So Phantasm is one of those that's been dogging me for decades, and now
nothing was better.
Weird Hill was always available.
Yeah,
right. Nothing was better, in my opinion, than going to the horror section at Blockbuster, because it had, like Scott said, you didn't forget the cover boxes on those VHS tapes. Mm-hmm. It is a classic art form that is his own thing. And yeah. I mean,
I'm most saying the rest I of did. It.
You did, I'm yeah. yeah.
I went to that section every single day for years as a teenager, and looked right past Phantasm movies because I was so like amazed by Chucky from Child's Play and the variations of Jason's mask and Freddy's fingers and this kind of thing. Like, all of those covers were mind blowing to me and caught my eye, and Phantasm movies didn't, and that's too bad because, like, I'm saying they could have done better. They could have, this is a 40-year-old movie. They really didn't know how important that was going to be, I think.
There's nothing, if you've ever been to the horror section of Blockbuster, once I saw the Frankenhooker box, I don't think anything ever lived up to the VHS Frankenhooker box. And I think that was actually like a battery built into it with lights and everything. It
no
was
way, just really, kind of like the Pink Floyd Pulse CD.
Yeah, so I mean,
there's an LED in there.
Yeah, it's just like an amazing thing.
Oh my gosh, you know who directed Frankenhooker? Just a side note. The guy's name, Frankenhooker, is written and directed by a guy named Frank Hentenlotter. Like, it's almost Frankenhooker if you just say his name too fast.
I was hoping you were going to say his name was Frank N. Hooker.
Frank N.
That would have been amazing. Anyway, we don't want to talk about that guy, but yeah, like this just is one of those. This is one of those holy grail sort of horror franchises that I just never got around to, and I love that we got to it on FilmSack. The question is, was it any good, or does it hold up? And my answer to that is, this is some of the most atrocious acting we've had in FilmSack history. Like, in the history of the show, we're in Troll 2 territory here, as far as I'm concerned.
And this is a 23-year-old director using local talent, for the most part, of actors that had not been in anything much, if anything at all. And it is a miracle that it even works and that we even are talking about it this much later. It's just...
I'll give you that. It is a really a miracle that this thing is still around and we're talking about it. Like, it's such like basic garbage, and that you try to find the thread of something really cool in here, and there is that stuff, right? Like, there is some concept that you just want to draw out and start over, right? With the, you know, with the bad, whatever the bad guy is. I don't know. The bad guy is a spirit.
The tall.
Well, that's the
tall
thing.
What is he? He's the alien. He's the tall man alien, and is played by Angus Scrim, by the way, stage name.
Oh, really? That's a disappointment. I really was hoping that Angus Scrim was his birth name.
Oh, man.
What did he change it from?
No kidding. Mrs. Scrim, what did you decide to name your
baby?
It
was something like Rory something. The reason why I took a stage name was because when he was doing some stuff while he was going to school and he wasn't supposed to be doing it, so he had a stage name in case they mentioned him anywhere. And it was like Rory, I forget his last name.
Here it is, Lawrence Rory Guy.
There you go. Lori guy
died a couple of years ago at the age of 89, and the photo, it's funny, they didn't use a photo on Wikipedia of kind of what you know him as. They have one from 2011 where he just looks like the guy who's directing you to housewares at Walmart.
Oh, look at that Frankenhooker thing you just put in the disc.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, there's the button you push. There's a little button on it.
Oh, there is. Yeah, press here. Oh, that's hilarious.
And it lights up little things. Look how worn that press here button is.
Wow. Right.
Well, the whole edges of the box. Yeah.
All right. Luckily, they didn't put that on our Frankenhooker boobs.
Want a date?
Press here and here.
Right.
I love that the tagline is want a date with a question mark.
Want a date?
Amazing. Amazing.
Wow. So back to the tall man. His motivation, like, what really I was trying to figure out. All right, so is his job to use this persona of the hot chick, go drink at the bar,
right?
Lure people back to the cemetery, kill them, shrink them for some reason, because I guess brown fabric is expensive.
Well, they had mentioned something that was interesting sci-fi wise. They had, and also in True Science. They had to be shrunk down because of the weight, the gravitational pull on the planet they were from.
Okay, so that's the whole reason, because then he's using them as slaves to do whatever he was doing back on the home planet through the portal.
Right. See, it all makes sense.
I guess so. Like,
It doesn't.
I didn't make sense about the. Okay, can you explain this? The barrels. Was there goo in those barrels? Did they ever show anything?
He said there's dwarves in here. So we assume there's dwarves in it. We assume that they're going through the process of replacing their blood, like embalming, because that was something that was Casarelli was interested in. He thought the idea of converting your blood into something else and modifying.
Oh, is that why the blood looked like? Like mango, like goo.
Right?
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I was wondering what the whole point of that is. Like, all right, is that alien blood? Is that? But that's like embalming fluid that they've all been replaced with. Okay.
That's what we're assuming. Right.
Yeah. I assume so. Yes. They're not explicit about it. Maybe the future movies do or whatever. But those things, I guess I was just waiting for those to pop open and things would come out or something and it would be a big deal. Right. And instead, I feel like
they just kind of get sucked into the vortex and they look really light when they're landing on the floor next to, to Jody.
Right. And when poor man,
Clint Howard
is getting sucked out of there. The effect is improved by having a lot of stuff moving around, lots of wind and everything, but didn't quite buy it. Like, it was just enough for me to say, you know, like Sigourney Weaver getting sucked out of a airlock while the alien's barely hanging onto her foot or whatever. That's effective. It feels like there's tons of wind, huge cargo things are flying all over that airlock or whatever. And it's an effective scene. And lots of movies do this. Like, it's actually a pretty tropey thing to do is have, you know, something ends with something getting sucked to somewhere else. And this, I just didn't buy it. It felt like there was a light fan on, maybe. There was some, like, fishing wire holding those empty barrels.
Light fan on oscillation.
Yeah, it was oscillating on Jody as he's trying to get out of there. I don't know. That whole thing. Plus, was he a... He was an ice cream man.
Yeah.
But they didn't really...
In the dream. In the dream. Well,
only
so
in
we
the
never,
dream.
We never actually address whether what his occupation is other than family friend if you only
so
want to talk
weird.
About the characters in the real world.
Okay, I'm starting to come to your... I'm coming over, Dunaway, to your side here because there are a lot of things in this movie that are just like weirdly placed, like, oh, okay, he's an ice cream man and the music's playing while he's driving at night and then he's...
This is what a 12-year-old would think, you know, his friend might be or do.
I think it's just a way of saying... It's just a way of saying, yeah, we really couldn't come up with a good reason for this. So it's all a dream.
It's one of the most fortunate explanations.
It totally
that
is.
Just worked out. I mean,
it's like Don Coscarelli. Like, you basically asked Don Coscarelli, he's like, why do you do this? All a dream. Oh,
it's
okay. Well,
dream,
why?
Baby.
Why does the tall man walk down the street and stop in front of the open ice cream truck in the cold air coming out and go?
Right.
Because it was all a dream.
I thought it meant that he was sucking up the essence of Reggie, and it was foreshadowing that Reggie was next. But according to the DVD commentary on the most recent release, or I'm sorry, Blu-ray release, one of the actors or directors said that it was every time they opened the refrigerator, that was the emotion they had, and I was like, is that tongue in cheek? What are you people doing? You're just lying now. Stop making up stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So by the way, Reggie, played by Reggie Bannister, the Tony
Clever.
Danza.
Wow.
Yeah.
Tony Danza has his own movie.
He does have his own website, ReggieBannister.com. And if you go there,
oh what?
It is GeoCities as hell and covered with silver balls with knives sticking out of them, as well as
hey man, if you got to have one thing, why not?
Yeah,
you know.
Oh yeah,
and
for sure.
And he's doing a lot of his acoustic stuff too, because I'll tell you, that scene with Jody and Reggie,
when they're playing
on the
guitar
porch,
together. Sure,
that's actually really like a charming moment that just happens in the movie. That I feel like it was probably just them goofing around.
I think that between scenes they started playing songs, and then Cascarelli said, "Oh, yeah, we could totally put this in the movie. You guys want to do
a
song
Why
in the movie?
Yeah.
It's a dream."
What's great about this, it says Reggie Bannister. The big underline on his GeoCities ass looking page is just a whole bunch of those blade balls. Just blade ball
yeah,
after blade
are.
Ball.
Right.
But if you hover over each one, they're all linked.
Like, oh, they're
little, it's like a little surprise.
A little JavaScript hover script.
Meet Regman.
Yeah. He also has a band called the Reggie Bannister Band, and he's got music, and I am dying to hear some of this.
I want more.
Yeah.
Thanks, Reg, man. Yeah. 2017 is the last time he updated the copyright. That's pretty impressive.
Oh, Angus Scrimm.
Because it does not look like he's touched this thing since 1998.
Yeah. He changed a number on this page. That's it.
That's all, that's all we're asking.
20 straight years.
Exactly. Is there a way to... I want to hear the music. Can I see this? Here it is. Music.
Yeah, it's like it's like the fourth ball from the right.
Reggie, hot as love, it says on the link.
Yeah, that's his line.
You know what? Let me tell you what bad navigation is, okay? Bad navigation is when your buttons are nondescript, samey-looking buttons that don't say anything, so you have to discover, like a freaking advent calendar, what you're clicking on. That's terrible. That's terrible.
Oh, my God. I love... Okay.
If you go to his music and scroll to the bottom, then you'll see... you'll see two YouTube video links.
Reggie B and the Jizz Wailing Yeah Doggies.
What?
Is that really?
Tyler's at the band name. Is that the band name? Oh, yeah, sure, I don't know, but I want to know.
The Jizz Wailing Yeah Doggies.
Okay, here's some of it. Let's just see what this sounds like. I don't know.
Have you seen it? Have you seen it?
I want it. I'm picking it up now. Buying it right now.
What's
baby.
Funny is the song, the cover, or so the YouTube video, the visual for it is the Phantasm Oblivion, the Phantasm for Oblivion poster. So he
Which
just
I think the song appears in.
Oh, does it?
That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I kind of love that this guy exists and is just so leaning into it. This is great.
And I just want to point out, like, the most legit scene in the film, the thing that, like, I would take away from this film and cut everything else and go, that was actually really cool, is Bill Thornbury and Reggie Bannister jamming on guitars on a front porch. Uh-huh. Because yeah, that was real. Like, that was
nope, part of a dream.
That was
that's okay, true.
But
it was maybe a real memory.
But wow. Like, I've seen a lot of losers pick up a guitar and jam, and this was good.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Solid. Yeah. Did they rehearse that. You felt like they had spent 2 months writing a song and figuring out how to make it look like they were.
They did the call and answer thing with the guitar. So like a lyric and then Reggie go,
that was their entire payment for this film was the exposure. You know what you need? Your band needs some exposure.
It got Reggie a GeoCities site and a Facebook page.
That scene had me ask that question. What is this doing in this movie?
It was the charming moment.
And Reggie's responsible for one of the big question marks of the movie. And it is kind of a chick in the bucket or a couple of chicks in the Volkswagen.
Oh,
bucket.
I'm glad you brought that up because I couldn't find one. So I'm going to play this.
Grab a bucket.
All right, go ahead.
There we go. Yeah. I mean, basically, he hooks back up with Mike and Jody at the mausoleum and tells them the story about, oh yeah, you know, I found the two girls who got kidnapped in the Volkswagen bug and some other girls that I'd never seen before. And I got them out of here and totally rescued them. And they walked into the woods. And it was like, well, that could have been something that you showed in the movie.
Right. Yeah. Right. Why show it when you can say it?
Then why not every movie just have a guy say, yeah, well, there was this big boat and then the boat hit an iceberg and then the boat fell apart and it sank and all these people died. Let me tell you
about Myrtle, the real chick in the bucket.
Okay, who's Myrtle?
You may have missed Myrtle.
Okay,
Myrtle was a jump scare when Mike went back home and he ran into apparently their housekeeper who lives with them and was never mentioned before or after.
Oh yeah, no, you know, oh, what right. You're right, that is very chick in the bucket. I mean, it's just a dream lady though, right? Like,
right, it's right, always a dream.
Yeah,
so it's
Myrtle's
hard to
a dream
say.
Yeah, Myrtle's
there was
a dream.
Also, there was something that I completely had forgotten about until I did the second half viewing this morning. I watched the first I talked about this pre-show, so I'm going to talk about it here, that I watched the first half of it again to add some stuff to my intro. And a scene that I totally had forgotten the first time, it's before Jody drives to the bar the second time after the night he fools around with tall man woman. And tall man there's woman. this like there's this scene where it's a blonde girl walking down the hall of the mausoleum.
She
opens the door, and then it's a cut to the exterior of the mausoleum, and you hear her scream, but it's never explained who she is, what she's doing there.
Yeah. And that was the other chick in the bucket. And I think I want to say, and I'm not sure, I've looked at some pictures and I can't say 100%, but maybe it's Double Lavender, the body double. She just got a scene or something, but it was really weird that scene was in there, because I couldn't tell who it was supposed to be, because they only showed her profile for just a second or two.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you see her from the back for most of it. And
the
fact that every woman in this movie has long feathered blonde hair doesn't help things.
And a couple of the dudes.
Yeah, yeah.
A couple of the dudes, right.
The only thing that made me think, I thought it might be the fortune teller's daughter, granddaughter, for a second, because it leads from that scene to the next scene of her going, of some, a lady going there that we don't know. So I kind of thought So I'm not 100% sure on who that was exactly.
She didn't have a star Sharpie on her cheek.
That's why I was, but her cheek was, it was, her star on the Sharpie was on the right hand side, and the Sharpie profile from the left.
That's true.
Do they get into more of what that's about in the next one? Like, are these, is this a, you know, there's always the
no,
two.
Because most of what was in this one was thrown away, except for a few scenes they revisited, I think in part four.
So we
revisit Mike as he's in a psychiatric hospital in two, and trying to deal with some of these things. Once again, this all goes back to the director's love for a film from the 50s that was about a kid who was trying to convince parents that there were aliens invading.
What was the name? What was the name of that movie? Do we know the name of that movie? That could be interesting to watch on here.
Yeah, I started watching this on actually archive.org. I started watching it afterwards just to see what it was about, and I can't remember the top of my head now. It's like, I'll figure it out in a second.
All right. Here's some trivia while you're doing that. The spheres that let's call it sphere, because we really never saw more than the one. And we saw it twice, once when it got blown up and once when it hit the guy in the face. But anyway, spheres were designed by a craftsman named Willard Green. He was charged for the production of a little over 1,100 bucks for his services. He basically just like a, it's like having, you know, Build-A-Ram build you something or something. It says, sadly, he died just after production completed at the end of 77 and never got to see these balls that would go on to be like the signature thing for.
He died from the balls. You know he did.
Yeah, you think the ball
got
him?
It's the phantasm cursed. It's the phantasm's curse. You know it is.
The ball got him.
Just like the poltergeist cursed.
But are we to believe that the tall man, everybody involved in this, dream or not, whatever, it's aliens then? Is that the idea? This is all aliens.
Do the follow up movies kind of continue down the alien path?
I think for some reason, I don't remember it being aliens, but I didn't really realize even it would have been aliens in this one. I would have just thought it was like Hellraiser, where you kind of end up in this hellscape that looks alien, but only because I've listened to some of the, you know, the director's commentary.
That could be. And that's fine. It's actually better. I like that better than if it's just aliens. Right. When he's in the, another thing that leads me to think this, maybe you're right about the dream thing. When he's in the antique shop and he's looking at the photo of the tall man, In the 1800s,
the Harry Potter picture.
The Harry Potter photo that's moving. He didn't seem to be shocked by the fact that it was moving. He seemed to be shocked by the fact that it was the tall man. So again, is he dreaming that? Am I to accept a reality where pictures move?
No, like, he's just a bad actor who doesn't do reactions.
I would like to know what you think was the scariest thing in the whole movie, because for me, it was absolutely that kid under the car. It just triggered every fear I've got. And I don't understand why the kid didn't display any fear. Like, I get that you're trying to portray that he's used to being there, but he's going to die. Like, he's going to get crushed.
Yeah.
That should be scary. I should see that on his face.
Right.
Yet he has the wherewithal and somehow the freedom of movement to hit his brother's toes with a hammer, even though he's completely pinned, and then just pop out and say, sorry, I thought you were one of those fellas.
That made me laugh so much when he
right, because it's like a donk. It's not a sound that would come from you hitting somebody in the toe with a hammer. It's like you're hitting a bucket, hitting a bucket with a hammer.
It was a weird cut.
It's a very weird cut. Okay, here's some more trivia. So we talked, or I think it was Randy at the beginning of the show made the Frank Herbert the Dune reference, or was talking about the Dune references. There are a bunch of those in here. The bar name is Dune. There's a scene where Mike is forced to insert his hand into the black box, inflict pain as part of a test. That's all part of Dune. We mentioned all that, but that's a weird thing to go and make these direct things. So you're making a really low budget horror movie, and you're like, man, you know what I like? Those Dune books. I'm going to just fill my movie
I'm going to somehow shoehorn a bunch of weird references to a movie that has a completely different tone and style.
A movie that didn't exist yet.
I mean, a book that had a completely different tone and style.
But now, you could trick me into believing that this film has the quote, "Fear is the mind killer." Mm. It felt like that's what they were saying in that moment. It's such a ripoff.
Yeah, for sure. This needs to be discussed. I'm trying to do it in the best way possible. All right. But there are two scenes, one where you get a boob and another scene where you get two boobs. And it's supposedly the same.
Do we get three boobs all at once in Phantasm 2?
Does that go full Total Recall and give us
or
three
boobs? Or does it follow the Fibonacci sequence and we get, five and then seven?
But what I wanted to say about these boobs is not the fact that we got them, because they should, here's a movie from 79. It's a horror movie. Guess what? There's some boobs in it. That's not a big deal. What I wanted to comment on, and I don't know why I'm bringing this up, but these are a special category of breasts. And by that, I mean,
are they real boobs? Is that your point?
No, I think they're real. There are probably there are people in this world that I'm sure have these, and I just never came across too many of them. But these are the kind of boobs that have no real transition from the flesh of the boob to the nipple of the boob. They're all one solid color and type. And there's
That's because that's what a 12-year-old thinks boobs look like because it's all a dream.
He's never seen a boob. This is what boobs look like.
Yeah.
Supported. Thank you.
You might actually be right. I don't know. But I just find I'm not offense to anybody who has experienced this, and it's fine, whatever. I don't know.
So you like a high contrast on your boob skin tone to nipple.
To me, it just seems normal. And I don't want to say this lady's got abnormal.
Perhaps you need to look at more boobs.
I know everybody's different. Every boob's different.
It was dark in the cemetery. I mean,
So what? So I think it was actually a product of what Ibbot is saying. It was poor lighting, which desaturates color.
You're probably right.
I mean, it was just an effect.
It's a weird thing for me to bring up. I know that, but it just struck me because I was just like, those are just like, what are those? They're like those, like when you go to like a Spencer's or something, and they always have like a stress ball in there, and that stress ball is super stretchy and squishy. That's what these look like to me. Like I could just go, I'll just squeeze that because I'm stressed. I'll just squeeze one of those.
Yeah, you're going to jail.
I'm going to jail.
They are an excuse for a man who considers himself a filmmaker to get a bunch of film and work around a half-naked woman for a few hours one day. That's all that is.
Reminder, this is a very young man at this time, director 23, 25, somewhere in that range.
There's a Penn and Teller episode of Bullshit where they have some naked people milling around on their set. And after that scene, they break the fourth wall and show you the behind the scenes about how every person ever related to the show showed up for the filming that day, because all of these like associate producers just suddenly had a reason to be on set. And it's just
I love that idea.
That's all that those boobs are.
Right.
Just a reminder,
if you ever forget, guys like boobs. So no surprise there. And if you get a chance to see a free boob show, I think that's probably, so we just have to rise above that.
I'm no judge of boobs, right? I've got some boobs myself, really. I mean, they're just sort of, they're not big.
And they're all the same flesh color.
You wouldn't know.
Is there a big differentiation between areola and flesh?
It's not. I mean, I try to keep a good shine on them, you know.
No, right.
Yeah, good distinctive contrast. But sure. Anyway, no,
honey, are my nipples too pale?
Yeah, what's up with these nipples?
I just appreciate any film where you see an odd number of boobs. That because it takes a lot of work and planning to have an odd number of boobs in your movie.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like when like I mentioned Total Recall earlier, where you get three boobs all at once.
Yeah. There you go.
At the least, you know, that's like, oh, weird alien thing. No way that's real. But this lady, it seemed like I'm going to hold one boob and cover it. The other one's going to be out because I got the knife. So you think that's, oh, she's holding back, doesn't want to show too much. Either the actress or even the director saying, you know, let's be a little, you know, let's go half here. No big deal. But then later it's all out again. So I don't understand what was that about?
We were still going through. I mean, the MPAA, the self-policing force of the movie industry, you know, at this point, we got a young filmmaker coming in trying to figure out how all this is going to play out, mm-hmm. you know, with ratings. And so, I mean, this happens a lot during the 80s where we're even adjusting the film scores to address some things like this. How many boobs can you show? How many Fs can you show? How many, you know, because even there's even a point where Mike is saying, and I don't know if it's just in the re-edit, because we watched a remaster on Amazon Prime.
Right.
And there's a point where there's several edits to the language. Even one point where Mike is saying WTF, and he just mouths it, doesn't actually say it. And it's a really weird moment.
What is it full on audio in the original unremastered one?
I'm unsure. I can't remember because it's been so long since I've seen it. And I think a lot of times when I was seeing it was probably either on regular TV, so they would have bleeped it anyway. So I wouldn't.
Yeah, that was one of his two shocked reactions, by the way. That was the one where he saw the tall man pick up the coffin and put it into the hearse by himself. That was the shockingest thing that this kid experienced, apparently.
I gotta say, I have been a pallbearer in many of a funeral, and it would kind of freak me out as well if I saw somebody manhandle a coffin.
Question.
Have you ever, as a pallbearer, have you ever carried the casket on your shoulder and done a
Never. Dance? I'm not that cool. I always just hold it down by my side and pray that I don't slip.
I have so many questions about the dancing pallbearers. And the main one is, do they strap in the corpse? Is the corpse tied down?
So it can't roll back and forth in there?
Yeah.
I don't know what that's about or why that's popular. It's what do they call it? It's a something death. I forget, but it's like
death
a
dance.
So they'll show maybe, but it's where like the videos are always like, here's a skater. And the way it's edited,
it's
the skaters.
It's a fail video.
Yeah, that's a fail video. So here comes the skater looking normal. Then they flash to these pallbearers standing still, just kind of looking around. Then they flash to the wipeout. And then they show these guys dancing with the coffin.
Right.
And then the music's always the same. And it's some popular, like, TikTok-y sounding, like, song. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know what that's a weird meme. That meme.
The more I see of death, the more I am 100% convinced that just burn my body, like right away, like no autopsy, just burn it. Just always let's find out what happened to him. Who cares? I'm dead.
Yeah.
Just burn my body. Viking funeral right now.
I would argue this gif I just put into our chat with this shocked face guy that you always see. I would say he's better at being
he's a better actor
than the kid was.
That is hilarious.
Yeah.
What is this like from anyway?
Right,
I want to know.
What this right out of Phantasm.
I don't know what this is from, actually. This is so old. I've seen it a million times, but I don't know where it comes from.
I love it.
But it's pretty great.
But he can't look away for, you know.
It's like he's trying. His face is shaking
His head is trying to make him look away, but his eyes won't look away.
Yeah. If you guys don't know what we're talking about, just look up shocked gif on the internet and you'll see what we're
talking about. Talking about that kind of stuff, Invaders from Mars is the film that was is marked as one of the influences from 1953, and I watched a little bit of it. It's on archive.org, by the way. If you throw some money their way, which I do, it's always good. It's saying,
is it?
I like archive.org.
I like it too. I find some really weird stuff on there, like out of copyright, you know, horrendous things like animation and stuff that no one even knew existed. I love digging around in there.
Yeah, I
like,
did too.
It's
and
got,
I also got a book. I did that, and I also got a book while I was there. It was the book that was on Mike's table in his dream.
I was wondering about that. Like, it was looked like a really cool science fiction, almost like the Marty McFly or right. the George
came
McFly
out a year,
book.
Came out a year before they filmed this, so it was very recently released. Is My Name is Legion by Roger Zelazny. Zelazny? I don't something like that. But My Name is Legion, 1976, and I checked it out on archive.org for 2 weeks. I'm going to try to read through that. Pretty short.
Yeah, I had not heard of that. But yeah, there's all sorts of stuff like that you can get on archive, and it's great. And sometimes sometimes there's like amazing old horror movies none of us have ever heard of that might make great film sack fodder. We just don't know what's there. So if anyone out there is like, hey, I found this thing that's out of copyright. It's this horrible 60s, you know, slasher film or something that you guys should totally sack. We'd be open to it because, you know, anyone can get archive.org. It's not as convenient as sitting down on your TV and watching, you know, Netflix or something. But
well, I watched the first, like I said, I watched like about the first 30 minutes of that film, the Invaders from Mars. And I laughed out loud no less than 4 times.
Yeah,
it was riotous.
Really? That sounds all right. Riotous. That seems like our kind of jam. All right. Anyone have any guess what grossed me out? It's a real simple thing that grossed
so
me out.
So many things.
None of the, I can tell you this, nothing to do with the ball. None of that. That word gross.
Right.
It was actually one of the most pedestrian things. In fact, pedestrian is a good word for it, actually.
Yeah, pedestrian. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
So the pedestrian thing that, let's see. I'll tell you one thing. Before central air conditioning in the U.S., there was a lot of sweaty people on film.
Really sweaty.
Yeah. It's
really sweaty. So they had, there was a scene, and this is part of the trivia as well. There's a scene at the end when Mike is up from his nightmare and he's talking to Reggie. Which we don't know if he's an ice cream man or not, but they were sitting in front of the fire and Reggie's got on this sweater and everything. And he is just pouring sweat, sweat. And I'm like, oh my God, why would you have a fire and sit in front of you or pouring sweat? And apparently they had to shoot that scene for so long, that I think they had to put aluminum foil or something on Michael's back so it wouldn't get burnt.
It wouldn't
so hot.
Oh, geez. Wow.
I was like, geez, cut that scene. Get out of here. Do something else.
Right.
Yeah. It's,
But the sweat.
No, what grossed you out the most?
All right, here's what grossed me out. We got to play this. That's so nasty. I don't know why I keep using it. It's this. It's full-on French tongue kissing while walking walking sideways, but your heads are crooked like this, and you're just... Right. You're like holding each other's hands almost like you're in a wedding procession, but you're just like eating each other's faces. That's horrendous. And you're going to fall. You're going
to
trip.
What is there to do in this town anyway?
Yeah, and her teeth.
Do it in the graveyard, baby. Let's go to the graveyard.
Her teeth were not the most attractive teeth. I'm just putting it out there. And he just looked gross. And there's just something about those two just macking like that while they're walking. Yeah. No one does that and walks. Nobody.
I don't. I'm not a big look. I love kissing myself. It's a sport that I like to participate in. But it's not something that
you
I
love
want
kissing
to
yourself.
I don't want to listen to it.
Oh, you love kissing myself. You don't mean kissing
myself.
Yourself. Yeah. You don't mean kissing yourself. I see what you mean.
I like that too, but that's beside the point. Right. But I'm just saying, in film and on TV, I'm okay with like a quick kiss or something, but I don't need no serious tongue. I mean, I start feeling uncomfortable. I start squirming in my seat. And people, they're just sitting. I'm like, I don't want to sit. I would never sit. And I think I've talked about this before. If I was out in public and I saw two people kissing, I'd just look away. Mm-hmm. But when I'm watching a film, I'm kind of locked in, and I would never sit and watch two people masticate each other's faces. I wouldn't do it. I would just like, okay, I can't, I'm not watching this.
Yeah.
It's not part of me.
So we always have what gross Scott out, right?
Yeah.
Don't and
usually.
This film made me realize I kind of want the opposite of that. Like,
what aroused Scott the most?
No.
I want to know that part. Go ahead,
Randy.
We know it's not
Land
areolas.
I want a what enthralled Randy the most. Like what Randy saw in this movie and then wanted.
All right.
Right? Like,
let's play test it.
You know what I'm saying?
Let's play test it. Let's play test it. What in this movie enthralled Randy the most?
I have a guess.
Okay.
Hit me.
Randy wants a Hemi Cuda.
Yeah, I got to have a Hemi Cuda. Come on.
What's a Hemi Cuda?
Yeah, mate? There was a time.
I wish I'd
seen this movie 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I would have absolutely been enthralled with the car, but I'm not really anymore.
All right.
I'm going with Hammer Bullet.
Hammer Bullet.
So this movie, I was absolutely enthralled with this concept, and I doubt it's possible anywhere in the world anymore, but I want to live near a wooden beach bar. I want to go to a beach bar that's made as a wooden shack. It just seemed so comfortable and inviting and pleasant. And I was like, this is like the opposite of what's grossed out Scott. It's like, I want that. I saw this in this movie. I'm just like, give me that. I need to retire within walking distance of that right there.
Right, right. It is very, yes, this movie has a couple of moments of just small town, just charm. And I think that's, I don't know, it's weird for it to be in here, but it felt really good.
And I tracked it down. I tracked the Dunes bar down. It was filmed on the north side of Huntington Beach, right before you get to Seal Beach. It's not there anymore. That wooden shack is gone. It's now a Japanese restaurant next to a motel.
Even better.
I was disappointed because it apparently was on the not on the beach side of the Pacific Coast Highway, which means it. I feel like I was lied to because it really felt like it was on the beach.
Mm, right. Man, really? You can come down to Charleston, South Carolina, if you want this kind of vibe.
Oh, really? Yeah, explain that. Like, is that a thing you feel when you go there?
Oh, yeah. It's just got that vibe like this. It's good.
Interesting. Okay. That's cool.
I love the beaches down in Charleston.
Yeah. Do you go there every year or in normal years?
Not every year, but we go often.
2020 being a kind of an odd year, but maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe if things.
Yeah. Yeah. Not this year.
No. Maybe not so much. Hey, you guys remember when 2020 was like the ultimate future date? Remember that? That was amazing.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
In the year 2020.
What's weird is
we're not going to see 2025, but right. It seems like the next one.
Says you.
Well,
okay.
Well,
I've got plans.
Yeah. Do you? You got some big plans?
Yeah.
Can you believe we're 5 months into the decade? Like, this decade has gotten off to a bad start.
No, it hasn't been great.
5 months in.
Hasn't been great. But that can, I mean, look, history's a rising road can only mean good things later on, right? That's what we gotta do that.
I've learned not to say that things can only go up from here.
Stop jinxing it.
Yeah, we gotta quit picking a point and saying, okay, from here it goes up. Right. Oh, wait, well, I'm sorry. From here is what I meant. Yeah, we gotta get better at that.
Has anybody ever picked up a lady faster than my friend here in this film?
No.
Well,
walked in, said, "How you doing?" and they went out the door. And
but
was
she
like,
was waiting.
Let's do it.
Wasn't that whole thing? No, she's waiting for it though, right?
Yeah, she's looking for recruits to shrink into Jawas. And,
yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. If you get lucky that fast, don't go. It ain't luck.
Hey,
that's a good point.
You're a feathered, blonde-haired lady I haven't seen yet in this town.
Right. Yeah. Not yet, anyway.
You want to head to the cemetery and make out behind some tombstones?
Yeah.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah. It's something else, man. They play fast and furious with the relationship-y stuff. And also, that brother's just kind of a Nimrod. Also, is it his dream, too? Explain that to me.
Because so they had a psychic connection because at this point... I like it. Okay, so this is actually talked about in the commentary. The director said that he was trying to set that premise up in the film during when you saw where Mike was
because there are parts where they're just not together.
Yeah, but he's dead. So does our character Mike have the ability to communicate with the dead?
Right. Well, wait. What? No, what I'm saying is like the brother's at the bar with the girl.
Mm-hmm.
The younger kid isn't there.
Mike?
Was he?
No, but he can. No, he's not there. He's not in the bar, although he's peering in the window at some point. So
yeah, he's always
in context.
So he's always he's around. Omniscient. He's always there. Okay.
And he has the dream. Then he's having a dream within a dream, too, because he's having the dream with the tall man standing at the. Up over the bed with his the zombies pulling him into the graves.
It was weird.
Got the dream within a dream thing then.
Yeah. I don't even think that guy's that tall, by the way. They call him the tall
He's
man,
not. But... They put him with platform shoes and gave him a outfit that was a size too small.
Yeah. You know who's a better tall man and he's still alive? It's that guy that was in Star Trek Next Generation and also played in the Addams Family movies, played the
Lurch.
Yeah. That actor needs to be this dude. If they remake Greasers, Doom New Phantasms. Or Doug Jones. Perfect pick.
But will anyone ever be able to walk like Scrim? I mean,
Yeah.
If you, give him, uncomfortable platform shoes, I think that was the whole thing about it.
Maybe
like,
so.
Oh, I've got to pull these damn heavy shoes.
Mother. I love the phrase, how will anyone ever walk like Scrim is a great out of context thing to say.
I think the president of the United States has proved that if you put a man in high heels, he's going to stand and walk fine.
Yeah, that'll work. All right, I have a set of clips to play if you guys are open to such ideas.
Got clips?
I do. There aren't a ton because the movie, honestly, is not like just chock full of dialogue. Honestly, there's a lot of quiet sort of stuff. But when they do say things, it's real dumb. Here's the sound. Here's the sound of some 70s. I wrote here, these are 70s ass shoe sounds is what I wrote. It's just in the mausoleum. Check it out. Something just 1979 about these shoes.
He had those dress shoes on, those cheap dress shoes.
Yeah, they're lame. Nobody.
The ones you rent from the Tux place.
Yep.
Oh my god.
Here comes our first of the tall man moment.
The funeral is about to begin, sir.
I like the sir.
Sir.
Yeah.
Sir. Maury White, stop yelling at me.
I'm sorry. Any funeral director who talks to you like that, don't go there ever. Go somewhere else.
There was a lot of moments where it was like, no. Yeah. Stick your hand in the box. No.
Yeah.
No.
It's dumb. Did you notice the you only see it for a second, but it's the painting that's hanging above the altar inside where the service is being held. Mm. It looks like Jesus has jazz hands.
No, I did not notice that. Now I want to notice it.
Jazz hands, Jesus.
I have to go look at it. All right, here's I wrote, what are they even talking about is what I wrote. So let's see what they're saying.
Hey, I don't like this place. Well, say goodbye to Tommy.
Okay. All right. I don't know what they were talking about. They were just like, I don't like this place.
They come in from off screen, like they've been standing around looking at each other just off camera, and then they both slide into frame from each side. And it's like, well, what were you doing before you said, oh, hey, Jody. Yeah. Oh, hey, Reggie.
Oh, hey, Reggie. How's it
oh,
going?
Oh, hi, Mark.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's because of the dream. It's because of the dream.
Disconnected from the visual of this scene, that sounded very much like he had Tommy in a barrel and was about to kick him down a hill.
Yeah, a little bit.
You know? Like, hey, what are you doing? Oh, I don't know. Say goodbye to Tommy.
Wham! Just kick it. I love that idea. All right. I wrote no one does here. Let's see what that was for.
Well, I just don't get off on funerals, man. They give me the creeps.
Yeah, no. Who gets off on funerals? Nobody does. Come on.
A blonde lady in the cemetery kind of gets off on funerals. Oh, literally gets off on funerals.
On a funeral, on somebody's grave. All right, Grandma wants to play something.
Michael, Grandmother wants to play a little game.
Wow, how'd you do that?
Put your hand in the box.
No, don't do it.
No.
Don't do it. Or else, if you do, you're going to hear Grandma do this. That laugh, dude.
Fido needs to go outside. Somebody left Fido out.
It does sound like a whimpering dog. That's funny.
I love the music in this film, by the way.
Do you? Do you? Because I thought it was a ripoff of the Halloween music.
But I think it had its own thing.
I've captured. Well, did I? I may not have. I don't remember. I may have.
There's one theme. There's one theme variation that has like this kick and beat to it that Reggie must have been involved with because it was just, it was nice.
Yeah,
had some nice percussion in it.
There were moments. I'll give you that. I do wish it had more of this though, but only four has it sadly, and that's this sound here. I think those are the only lyrics is have you seen it over and over.
Yeah. Have you seen it? It's in the box.
Have you seen my Night Ranger collection?
Jody. Nothing like a bald guy with a ponytail. It's one of my favorite looks.
Oh, yeah.
Reggie.
No, wait.
Poor Reggie. He was a young balding man, too. Because even here you could see he was like, that's a young man.
Oh, he's like probably totally bald. 27 or not even that. Yeah, he balded young. Right. All right, I wrote that sound is what I wrote. Oh, yeah, this is when they were getting creeped up by
that. Oh, that sound.
Yeah, that sound. You remember the one. All right, this may be the best scream in Film Sack in a long time, so I'd like to share it now. This is the brother being shocked by something. Here you go.
That was Hammer Toe.
Yeah, Hammer Toe.
It sounded like he was shocked by an electric guitar.
Yeah.
No, it sounded like a cardboard tube that's left over after you use all the wrapping paper.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Listen to that again. We'll hear it one more time. I think it might have actually been that.
That or a wiffle ball bat. Can't tell.
That's the new film site game is name the, what's the gaffer, not gaffer, the,
yeah. The Foley instrument.
Foley, yes. What's the Foley? Yeah.
What's the Foley?
What the Foley?
Yep. And I'll get a Matt Foley sound clip for it.
There you go.
Let's see. I wrote, what the hell is going on?
What the hell is going on?
Oh, it's because that's what he says. All right. That's one of those. All right. I really need to label those differently so I don't just say the thing that it says, but there it is. This is a great moment about warning shots, and it's awesome. Here you go.
No warning shots. Warning shots are bullshit.
Yeah, warning shots are bullshit. Yeah. Some good brotherly advice there.
Yeah.
What's this? Nobody driving? Oh, okay. Another great line. This is so full of these kind of lines.
There's nobody driving that mother.
That mother.
That mother.
Trucker.
Mother. We're going to go there and kick the shit out of him.
I'll get that tall bastard. Oh, in fact, I think it's right here.
I see it. I see it all now. What we gotta do is we gotta snag that tall dude and stomp the shit out of him, and we'll find out what the hell is going on up there.
We gotta find that tall dude.
Find him, tall dude.
That's so good.
Do you want me to do another take? That one didn't feel right. No, no. We're burning daylight. Keep on going.
That's a wrap.
That one didn't feel like right. Well, I mean, all the other trivia here, because you know, young filmmaker just trying to make it happen. All this stuff is like rented. Like they rented cameras for the day. They had to film everything in like a couple of days. Like it's that kind of movie. Brian, I have some audio from your prom night, but there's no like description around this, so I don't know what happened. Yeah. But
let's hear it, and I'll tell you what was happening.
Yeah, you can give us context. Here you go.
Have to take me home.
But why?
No questions. You must take me home.
What happened? Did everything go okay at the prom?
She only showed me one boob, and I was kind of disappointed by the whole thing.
That's it. Take me home.
She only showed me one boob. And the other one was busy holding
How do I
knife.
Know the other one's good?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I need to see both, please.
Here's a good one.
What the hell's that?
She's a really good actress, that girl.
Is that that's in the Volkswagen?
Yeah.
That's in the Volkswagen. I
guess they were just the antique shop owners
they were cousins or something like that.
Cousins.
I think they were cousins.
Yeah. And she owned a thing. So the idea was that he would be safe with them if he went and hung out.
They weren't safe with him because we've already seen Beastmaster and we know how this director feels about cousins.
Yeah. He didn't like the cousins, kissing ones or otherwise. But it feels like the kind of line that was supposed to be, what the hell is that? And she decided to do it mixed. So let me try that again.
What the hell's that?
So she's just, what the hell's that?
Is that?
Yeah,
that's, you want me to do that line again?
Yeah, it's dumb.
Yeah, yeah. This very much felt like 1979 young director walking around going, "Hey, you want to be in my movie?"
Yep.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yep. It's a girl down at the Burger Hop. Mm-hmm. No, that'd be the 50s.
The Burger Hop.
Yeah, I don't know why I said that. All right, here's something about a lighter.
Okay, stay together.
Wait a sec, I think I got a lighter.
Quick, light it up.
Light it up.
It's so bad.
That's one that's in pitch black. They're in the room with the portal. And at one point, Jody goes, "Hey, come over here." Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I can't. It's pitch black. I don't know where you are.
Yeah, what is here?
But, you know, I kind of like this in a film. But if you've ever been to the theater and a film does this trick where they you know, everything is black and you just have voices around you talking and you feel like you're part of the scene, and it's kind of cool. However, this film got screwed because some earlier releases on videotape for this one, the editors cut it because they thought it was the end scene. So they didn't listen to the audio. This went, oh, here's black screen. Chop, chop. So some of this stuff just jumped from the beginning of the black scene to the next thing.
I noticed that. There's also some weird, weird editing all around, but I couldn't tell if it was on purpose or not, but there was a very quiet thing happening, and then suddenly it's the red view of the ball hurling down the hallway.
Ball vision.
And it was loud, and it was just like, oh my gosh, what are you guys freaking doing here? Ball vision. I like that. Mm-hmm. All right. Something about a tall bastard.
Because we're going to run that tall bastard straight down to hell.
Oh my gosh, I can't take that guy seriously.
Tall bastard.
And you wanted more dialogue.
Yeah.
Just say no.
Say no. All right. One final thing. This is from the tall man saying, well, he's given props to the kid. So here you go.
You play a good game, boy. But the game is finished. Now you die.
Wow.
Well, see, I would have given more lines to Scram.
Yeah.
Look at him predicting the Game Boy, though.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Play a good Game Boy.
Game Boy.
You're really good at Dr. Mario, but that's over.
Yeah. He was 10 years ahead of himself there. That's amazing.
Yeah, exactly. Look at that.
That's also weird to think. 10 years before the Game Boy.
Scrimstradamus.
All right. On that note, on Scrimstradamus as a note, let's now do this. It's the Film Sack Checklist. Ball to the head, check. Music sounds like a Halloween ripoff, check. Never trust an ice cream man with a ponytail, check. Hey, Star Trek connections. There are 17 actors in this. None of them did anything in Star Trek. So yeah.
I checked deep. I looked at music composers and producers.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys get my email?
No. Did you send an email?
Oh, yeah. Oh, Brian, email. Brian did find one person.
Oh.
Yeah, it has to do with the room. The effect of the mansion disappearing in a bright, colorful light was done by Joel Westheimer, who did many of the effects on the original Star Trek series. The effect on the mansion is the same one used for the transporter sequences on the series.
Oh, look at that. All right, look at you digging something. A little deeper and finding something. A thing. Yeah, it's something.
I'm not saying it's great. I'm just saying it's something.
It's something.
It's a dream.
Yeah, it's a dream within a dream.
I don't think one of the Bryans is going to let the other Brian go on his dream.
Yeah.
Because, seriously, Coscarelli thought of the whole It's a Dream thing about 10 minutes before he had to turn in the cameras, return the cameras back to the library.
Yeah. Whole dream.
I think he thought of It's a Dream after he had already finished filming.
There you go.
Right, yeah.
For the soundtrack grade, I say that with some emphasis because we have a funny email about what I say in this part of the show. For the soundtrack grade, I would give it an E for era appropriate. Just felt like a 1979 ass movie.
Yeah.
And that's what you get.
I thought it was good soundtrack. For its, you know, like station, for its tier of movie. I thought it was good.
Yeah, for the place it's in, it's all right. All right. Now we get to the Twitter post. This is the momentous moment where you guys sum things up in 280 characters or less, and you do it in turn. Let's start with Randy.
Phantasm. Immediately after the spasm of orgasm, a miasm of ectoplasm casts you into the eternal chasm of nothingness with enthusiasm. Yes, this is sarcasm.
Nice.
I can't beat that, so I'm just gonna skip mine this week.
Oh wow. No way. You're required by law.
Oh, it's not a competition.
No.
In that case.
Yeah.
Phantasm.
Yeah.
You couldn't even beat our level one dwarf in the basement. The funeral is about to begin, sir. Hashtag murderball.
Level one dwarf in the basement.
That's really good.
He just came in there. Toby was all like, I'm going to break into the mansion, the mausoleum, and I'm going to do this and this and this. And he gets down there. It's like one little dwarf can't even beat him. Gets back out the window, runs away.
Yeah. It's pretty weak. It's pretty weak sauce. I agree.
And then go back to the forest and kill some boars until I'm a higher level.
Exactly. All right. Let's round it out with Brian Nibbett.
Phantasm, like a fine dog turd, this film is little and brown and low to the ground.
I did like that. Did you catch that clip?
I was amazed that Scott didn't have that in his clips. Little and brown and low to the ground.
It was a horny, what do you call it? Was it a horny gopher? What was it?
Gopher and Heat.
Gopher and Heat, that was it.
Yeah. Gopher and Heat is correct. All right. Oh my gosh, you guys. It turns out this movie had alternate titles, and now I can tell you what those are. So here you go. It was almost called Fangasm. I don't know why I put fan. Oh, because fan.
I like it.
Tasm. It's Fangasm because the lady had a fake orgasm at the beginning. Anyway,
right.
Or
how do you know it's fake? It was a dream.
Yeah, that's true. Or there will be yellow blood. All right, moving on. Here's an email from Ash. These came to us on the website.
What?
You can either go to filmsack.com or you can. I know,
hey,
that's
Ash.
Pretty funny. What's great too is that this dude is a big Sam Raimi friend, the Coscarelli director guy. Him and Sam Raimi are like best pals. They hung out on this set together while this was being made. It would have been right around the time that he was working on Evil Dead and all that. So
I like that little bit of trivia, but it's funny we got something from Ash. So anyway, we've come full circle. Ash says this, just a heads up, the 1985 zombie classic Return of the Living Dead is streaming on Amazon Prime. This is one of my favorite movies of all time. Talking fast zombies that at the first that for the first time on film actually crave brains. Lots of trivia, special effects, quotable lines. Please consider this one. Now, when I first read this email, I went, I swear we've done the 85 Return of the Living Dead.
We didn't do that one.
And I can't find it in the feed. So did
we? No, I don't think we've done it. I don't think we've done that.
Is it the one in the cave? Because we did the one in the cave.
It is amazing. I love it. Now, is this Return of the Dead the first one or Return of the Dead 2? Or which one was it?
This one's Return of the Living Dead is what
it's called. Yeah, 1985. Yeah, okay, yeah.
So this would have been the George Romero thing. It's the third film in his Living Dead series, right? So you had the first one, then you had Dawn, and then you had this, I think. I swear we've done this. I swear we've done it.
Maybe we did.
Hold on, I'm looking right now.
I don't think we have.
I thought we did too, but I've seen this movie so many times.
I mean, if I do a search for Film Sack Return of the Living Dead, I don't find it. There was the color. There was the black and white one we saw.
Yeah. Right.
With Martha. No, I can't remember what the woman like. it's coming to get you, Barbara. That one.
Yeah, we did. Did we do that? Did we even do that?
We did that one. We totally did that one.
All right. Night of the Living Dead, we did. You're right. I found it. Okay. So I'm looking here. Right. The only Living Dead movie we have done is Night of the Living Dead. We've not done Dawn or Return.
Oh, really? I thought Return's we did a second one. No?
We've not done Dawn.
We've done Day of the Dead.
Day of the Dead's what I'm thinking of.
We actually did Day of the Dead before we did the other one, right?
Right. Day of the Dead we did before. That was episode 207. It was 2014, back in June of 2014. Okay. However... That's the one I'm thinking of in the cave. So Return is something different.
I feel like having sacked Night of the Living Dead, we've kind of covered ourselves. Like, we don't need to watch all these movies, right?
I don't know.
You got it.
I don't know.
I will say that Return of the Living Dead is a touchstone film. I think that I really think is worthy of.
I agree. I have no problem doing Return. Yeah. And also the remake of Dawn, which came out in 2004, the Zack Snyder thing, is awesome. It's a great remake. Yeah. I would love to watch that for film sake. I have no problem.
That's the one in the mall, right?
Yeah, that's the one in the mall. Yep.
Yeah.
And that particular one has Phil Dunphy in it, but he plays the worst character. Oh, he's such an ass in that movie.
Right.
And it was so hard for me because I would watch Modern Family when it was in its heyday, and I would go, just pretend you didn't see him in Dawn.
Pretend he wasn't a dick.
It never happened.
Such a jerk in that movie. My gosh. But anyway, it was like Ving Rhames was in that, and it's cool. The remake's cool. It's very good. Which is why people are all like, I don't care about Zack Snyder's new Netflix zombie thing. I do, because I think he's got a taste for that stuff, and it's good to see him get back to his roots. So get in there, Zack Snyder, and make it happen. All right, one from Jason Kusick. It says this, hey guys, just been listening to your show for years. Love what you do. I just realized I've been mishearing Scott this entire time.
Whoa.
When he says soundtrack grade, I always thought he was saying soundtrack's great. And then he would give it a grade. I thought that was really weird because he would say soundtrack's great. I give it a C. And I would think, why a C? C's not very good. Anyway, keep up the good work. So yes, it is soundtrack grade, not great. Okay.
Right.
All right. Cleared that up. Thank you, Jason, for doing that for so many who couldn't speak for themselves. Well done. Our next film is Zapped.
Zapped.
Yeah. Forget what you know or like or dislike about modern day Scott Baio or his friend.
Or don't.
Yeah, or don't.
Maybe go into this with a chip on your shoulder for Scott Baio.
Yeah, or if you love Scott Baio, wherever your stance is, come on in here and watch us or listen to us talk about Zapped, the 1982 telekinesis tale with him and his old pal from Charles in Charge on there.
Williams. And I misspoke before the show. I said it was Harvey Korman. It's Robert Mandan, who is Chester Tate on Soap.
Oh, all right.
He's a poor man's Harvey Korman.
All right. Well, we have now untainted Harvey Korman's.
But it is Scatman Crothers, who, you know, did this, did The Shining, and.
And did Scat. Did Scat. Yeah. And also liked playing with his own poo. That's why they called him the Scatman, right? That was the reason?
Oh, I thought he was just an expert.
Oh, weird. Okay. I thought he'd make a little bowl of it and he would just kind of mush it and play with it. That's what I thought was going on.
Gotcha.
Maybe not.
That totally makes sense now.
Anyway, that's Zapped, and it's on Amazon Prime. again. Mm-hmm. We're finding some real gems over there, by the way. So, hey, look at us doing
Are
Prime.
We?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, we're going to... Zapped is over there. That's going to be a blast. What was the one we just said earlier? Oh, Return of the Living Dead, also on Prime.
Okay.
Well, you disagree with the statement that it's a gem. Okay, all right. I mean, look, you have to admit, Phantasm is like Film Sack 101, dude. Like,
no, I'm glad. No, that's not the right word. I accept that we watched this, and I acknowledge its presence in our oeuvre. I just thought it sucked, and last week's movie sucked, and I don't ever want to see another Coscarelli movie. Thank you. We're done.
I think we're probably done with Coscarelli. I can't think of a reason to go back to him. But
Did he do any of the sequels, the Phantasm sequels? Because I could see us revisiting the supposed best of the bunch, Phantasm 2, at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been involved with some other ones too. So I mean, mm-hmm. absolutely.
Yeah. I'm suddenly intrigued by that dude. And he seems like a really nice guy. Like, by all accounts, mm-hmm. he's like this fun loving goofball that's just known for this stuff. And
yeah, I think he's directed all of them except for two, three, and four.
He didn't do that one called Phantasm Ravager, which is...
Yeah, that's the most recent one. Yeah. But he did write it.
Yeah, well, it says based on characters by, but I don't think he wrote it. Did he? Right. Maybe he did.
Maybe just the characters.
He wrote and directed four Phantasm movies, and the most recent one was 98. What?
Yeah. Well, and by the way, so a lot of people really like John Dies at the end, and a lot of people really... I personally really like Bubba Hotep. And I think this 2020 or whenever they're going to do it, Bubba Nosferatu, Curse of the She-Vampires, sounds great. So I have a place in my heart for this guy and what he's trying to do. And I'll allow it. Like a judge in a terrible TV drama, I will allow it. All right. That's it for today's show. Thank you all for listening. We appreciate it. We hope you're all doing okay out there and staying safe, and things are a little nuts this week. We hope the show brings you a little smile to your face and a form of escape from today's worries. That's what it does for us. We hope it does that for you as well. Filmsack.com is the place to go if you'd like to get more. If you want to rate us on wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, whatever, you can go do that. That'd be wonderful. And you can email us at filmsack@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter @FilmSack. That's going to do it for us. For me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Or for Inheat.
We'll see you next time.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.